reconvene the House Revenue Committee and open a work session on House Bill 3942. Paul, would you take us through the amendments that are before us today?
Mr. Chair, there's two amendments. The first is the dash two, and what this reflects is the discussion from last week. Changes are under section one, sub two. There's a lot more specification of the membership of the task force. In the dash ones, there was no limit number or specification of legislators. So this sets a limit of 15 members appointed by the Speaker in the House, as before, and no more than four, which interpreted as four, as legislators. So there would be two from the House, two from the Senate, presumably one from each party, would be on the task force. The other changes on page two, under three, sub M, there was an addition there to consider the impact of the tax on low-income households. This is in reference to the business activity tax and also a specific referral to senior citizens because they're a part of the overall tax package, although they were not part of the 3942 initial bill.
Mm-hmm.
Sub 4 there talks about the task force shall report on an ongoing and periodic basis to the interim committees on revenue, House and Senate interim committees. And, of course, as before, the staffing of the task force would be for the Legislative Revenue Office, and the appropriation under Section 2 remains a blank to be worked out as this is a referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay. And the dash 3s?
The dash 3s, the major difference here is that the dash 3s delete any reference to the business activity tax. So that
except on line 21, we're just
so considered a business activity
and other revenue sources.
Right, and other revenue sources. It doesn't go through and list those specific issues around the business activity tax that were a part of the discussion and interaction when that was 3942 was first proposed.
Okay. Committee, I'll just explain that the dash twos and threes, I asked to have the dash threes drafted just for committee discussion. I think they're both going the same direction. The dash twos, I would call the dash three maybe the vanilla flavored amendment. The dash twos are more the tutti frutti, where they have more flavor to them because they specifically identify the issues that we got to in looking at the BAT. So to the extent that 3942 becomes the dash two amendments become the vehicle for this, it lifts these issues up to be specifically addressed by the work group, although not exclusively addressed, because the language in the dash twos is still there to look at the business activity tax and other revenue sources. So I don't consider that to be exclusive of any other proposals that might come forward to or from this interim work group for revenue reform. The dash three amendments, I say, are much more the vanilla flavored amendments that basically say go out and study tax reform without the emphasis on the components of the business activity tax. And frankly, I think that in substance, it probably won't make much difference to the extent that I have any input on the on at least the initial focus of the work group, but I wanted to leave it to the committee members to talk about that, to the extent to which we want to make the business activity tax a to elevate that, I guess, as a focus of the work group, or to bring that back down to a more equal footing with whatever other proposals might be brought forward. And I would, I guess, at this point we're not in public hearing, but I'll be happy to bring up anybody who wants to speak on either one of these amendments. Gary Carlson, come on up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gary Carlson with Associated Oregon Industries. I think out of these two options, we'd much prefer the dash threes. I can't overstate to you, I think, the reaction that we have had from our membership and in conversations with others representing different trade groups in this building, for example, the fear factor is extremely high right now, given the publicity around the state from interest groups, ours included, about the proposal that's been made earlier this session. And there has just been a huge concern level raised. So, in fact, when I first looked at the dash twos, or the dash ones, I should say, my thought was you could certainly do this, review the entire state tax structure within the auspices of the interim committee, but this would elevate the concept of doing a broader, more thorough study of the state's tax structure and the kind of issues you and the committee have been grappling with all session, without the target, if you will, of the focus being quite so tight as it is in the dash twos. So we would urge you to adopt the dash threes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Beck.
I'd like to make a motion.
Well, let me ask if there's anybody else who wants to testify on any one of these amendments before we do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Mr. Cronin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I won't take much of your time. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, and I do tax policy for my union, American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. The only comment I have to make, it's important to me, I did 100 seminars last year on tax system in Oregon, and that was because I became very tired of always having to fight initiatives that were in front of my members and other unions, so I decided it was time to probably go to the basics. Make the long and short of it, what I learned was more than what I was teaching, and the fact of the matter is I found that CEOs, frankly legislators other than very few, because legislators did attend my workshops, and the fact is I think the dash threes are fine, but they probably really beg what I now see as the problem in Oregon, and that is a need for a massive, massive educational program that hits all citizens of this state so that they understand what the ballot measures have done to this state since 1990. There are four or five of them. So that they understand where the money goes, what it's used for in clear and simple and understandable terms, and that, quite frankly, this revenue system in this state is broken, primarily because we've tied the hands of this legislative body, not only in terms of our revenue flow, but in terms even of the lottery. And the citizens of this state, I have learned through the 7,000 people who attended my seminars, quite frankly, didn't understand, and if it weren't for the reception I received, including the State Managers Association, CEOs, Chambers of Commerce, church groups, etc., it was broad-based. The fact is, what I did learn is that what is really needed is not so much a tax measure of any type to go in front of the public, but going out and looking for funds that I realize can't come from the general fund to begin looking at a massive education program to teach the citizens basically what I was doing was called Connect the Dots. So I just want to state I needed to say it once. I had massive experience with this through an entire year. And what I learned was the citizens, to a person, were thankful that someone finally came and taught them in simple, understandable, based on fact, my data came from legislative fiscal and legislative revenue, what is needed. So my only suggestion is that not so much just to look at a measure, but to look at what the heart of the problem really is, and that it's a system that is in a state of disrepair, and that's understating it. And if that system is in disrepair, then the citizens of this state need to understand why, in a clear, nonpartisan, no anti-business bashing went on in mind, but quite frankly, how that system functions and when it started to break, why it broke, and how come it broke. And so As far as I'm concerned, I would use that same seminar this next year. So I would hope you'd look at this not just as proposing the possibility of a tax measure, but some of us have become knowledgeable that aren't just in the business organizations. At least this person has become, by accident, quite knowledgeable of the tax system and budget system in Oregon because I was forced to. And I would hope maybe you would include a labor person on there who might talk about what I'm talking about, and that's the need for massive education program far in advance of ever attempting in this state to provide a tax measure. It simply won't pass.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Croner? Anybody else? Tom Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tom Gallagher. I just want to talk about Section 1A in both of these. I would like the committee to talk a little bit more about why you want to presuppose revenue neutrality. My first tax reform work group was 1980 on a sales tax, and I don't know what revenue neutrality actually buys you, given the rest of the problems with the budgets, et cetera. So I would ask the committee to take a good hard look if you want to write that into your study bill as an objective rather than one of the options. You may very well come back politically to neutrality because it sells better. But you've changed everybody's taxes, and you haven't raised a dollar. So.
Okay. Anybody else? Rich Preppers. Everyone's taking notes of things to talk about here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to address you on this bill. Rich Preppers, Service Employees International Union, Local 503 OPEU, and I wanted to just point out a couple of things that might be worth looking at. One of them is, I'll second what Tom Gallagher was just saying, is revenue neutrality is something that you might want to discuss a little bit more. The realities are that you have to provide an incentive for people to want to be actively involved, and while it's true that that creating a more stable system is a reward in and of itself and should be part of the motivation, I think that having the possibility of talking about more revenue adequacy is one other way to incent people, to use a horrible verb,
yeah,
to be involved. But
that impacts me. Just
it sounds illegal.
So I won't say that word anymore. And the other points I wanted to make with you. One is in line 17 of the dash threes, the term personal income taxpayers. You may want to look at possibly breaking that term down, the representatives from that category down into specific income levels in the way that you've also addressed different interests within the business community, because among individual taxpayers there are certainly different interests based on where you sit in the income spectrum, and that might be one possible amendment to look at. And then the other, I'll second what Ralph was saying, Ralph Groner, and that is that it would be good to get some representation from labor in the task force as well. We think of ourselves as partners and stakeholders in the discussions, and hope you do too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and we agree with everything that the wise and wonderful Mr. Peppers just said to the committee, and so I won't restate what he said. In addition to those concerns, also on page 2 of the dash 3 amendments, lines 19 through 22, I'm a little concerned that language which allows the task force to accept funds from other sources is a little broad, in that it says, and agree to conditions thereon not inconsistent with the purposes of the task force. My concern is the task force is a legislative task force created by the legislature and directed by the legislature to do a certain task, and I would hate after you go home to have someone with a fat checkbook come in and redirect the task force. So I think that language could be, if you have a particular intent in including this language, I think that I would suggest you tighten the language to specifically deal with that intent and keep control of the task force with y'all.
Paul, do you want to speak to that language? It's my understanding that it was boilerplate language from legislative council as to in this very kind of commission or group that's authorized to receive funds. You know offhand?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. This was language that had been used before, and it does, you know, it does seem to be pretty general.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Chair. Given the stated in the amendment stated intent of the task force, which is very broad, mm-hmm. it seems to me that if I had enough money in my checkbook and was willing to give it to the task force, I could send them out on a direction that I thought was important. And I think that in order to get the most comprehensive product from the other end, you wouldn't want to limit it by outside influences with their own funding.
Well, I'm guessing, and maybe if Dexter is listening, I'll speak slowly, that this is probably addressing conditions I would expect some funding to be given, but you can't use it to take the group out to dinner at the fancy restaurant downtown. I think those are the kind of conditions this is getting at, not getting at conditions that are substantive in terms of the work product of the task force. That's certainly the way that I would intend that it be applied anyway.
I can certainly understand, Mr. Chair, the concern about not allowing someone to wine and dine the task force members into a conclusion. I also, though, am concerned that a particular portion of the tax policy be emphasized as a result of a contribution to the task force.
Okay.
Thank you.
Won't happen. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Bob Russell. Marcia? Who's first? Marcia, you're closer. Come on up. Okay.
We're on a committee together.
You're both in transportation.
My other hat.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Marcia Kelly, I'm the Women's Rights Coalition lobbyist, but on this bill I will speak for the American Association of University Women. One of the things that is missing out of the Dash 3s is an equitable tax emphasis, and that's the policy of the American Association of University Women, that it be a broad-based and equitable tax system for the citizens of Oregon. And I'll be happy to drop by our legislative policy to all of the committee members.
Marcia, what I would say, I was just taking with Paul, we have, not in this bill, but we have in statute the statement of tax policy for the state in which equity is a factor. And so I think I would consider that to be, to overlay whatever we do here, it would have to be consistent with already mandated legislative tax.
And policy. I don't think that you would need to put it in, but we just want to make sure that the tax task force looks at it. And so when you've had some hearings and you say equitable, it would be good.
Okay.
I'm Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Russell, Director of Government Affairs with the Oregon Trucking Association, and I want to thank you for the opportunity. A couple of things. We certainly prefer the Dash 3s. When I was here last time, I clearly indicated to the committee that the Oregon Trucking Associations would be happy to work on a task force that included a value-added tax. There's no question about that commitment.
It's business activity.
Business activity tax.
We get to call it whatever we want to.
That commitment hasn't changed. However, in further discussions with my members, there was some concern that if we held the business activity tax up to too high of level, that it may have an impact through fear on investment in Oregon. That they would certainly prefer that we look at a broad range of solutions to the problem. So the Dash 3s go a long ways towards that end, and that would be why that we would prefer them. They could go a little further, quite frankly. And the second point that I would like to make is I don't really see a clear statement here where we're talking about the efficiency of the tax itself in a mechanical sense. What's the cost of collection? What's the prevalence of evasion? And those kinds of things. And I think with any tax that we look at, we ought to look at those factors to see how much of the money is actually going for its intended purpose and how much is getting eaten up in the collection system or evasion or legal avoidance. And I would hope that the committee would include that as one of the factors they'd like to address.
I think, and you may know better, but I think efficiency is also in the overall principles of tax policy, along with equities. Paul, do you know? I'm interrupting. Bill, you and you would never say it, but you'd know.
Yeah, it is, Mr. Chairman. Administrative efficiency.
Yeah.
Not economic efficiency, but administrative efficiency is in the overriding objectives of the tax code, as is equity.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Marcia Kelly, again, we would prefer the dash threes.
Okay. Dexter Johnson, do you want to talk about the boilerplate there? Were you listening when we were...
Don't ask me that question.
Or did you just drop in to see how...
Mr. Chairman, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. Actually, I confess I was not listening at the time, so I missed a lot of this, but I understand that the concern is over some of the language in subsection 8. And all I can say about that really is that's kind of standard language that is included in a lot of provisions that create task forces to study things. I don't, off the top of my head, see any reason why it couldn't be modified to basically delete most of the language in line 12 there, but...
Which are you looking at, the dash twos?
These are the dash twos, where it talks about agreeing to conditions thereon not inconsistent with the purposes of the task force.
Okay, or in the dash threes, that'd be on page 2, lines 20 and 22. Okay. Thank you. Representative Kafoury.
Is this the time where we can tell you our opinion?
Oh, yes. Please tell me your opinion. Let's kind of hold off on motions until we've had a chance to roundtable this.
I guess I would suggest that we go with the dash two amendments, and I will tell you why. I think that we have had many task forces looking at the state tax system, and in fact, the two previous sessions we had large reports from these interim task forces that were made up of extremely important and influential citizens in the state of Oregon, and they came to us at the beginning of session and laid out their reports, and nothing happened to them. So I would hope that we can have a different result from this task force. The other point that I wanted to make is I would hope that we aren't going to lose. Well, and why I like the dash two amendments is I don't want to lose all the work that we've done so far this session looking at the BAT. And we've really narrowed and identified some of the important issues that we struggled with. And I think if we open it back up to the big picture, then it's kind of, it's somewhat of a waste of all the work that we've done. So those are the two main reasons that I would support that we... that I would urge
at least. May I respond?
Yeah.
I will vote for either one of these. Representative, before you refer to not losing the focus on the BAT and the good work that we've done in this session. And the pugilistic part of me wants to say, well, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead and do the dash threes just because we can, because we're the ones that have the votes. By the same token, I think there has been a substantial degree of goodwill also expressed on the part of business groups who have expressed trepidation about the specifics of the BAT. And while I don't want to lose the good work we've done, I'm also concerned about not losing the goodwill that we have amassed try to capitalize on that in the interim. And while I would intend, even under the dash threes, Paul and I, and through the committee staff, we've already worked up the BAT, and that becomes easily a point of departure for the discussion. By the same token, if somebody in the group comes in with this dynamite tax that simply we've never considered before, I wouldn't intend to foreclose consideration of that. While the initial focus I would expect to be on the BAT. I think the problem is big enough that if there are creative solutions out there that we have not considered, I want to express that we are inclined to be open to those as well. And maybe the dash three sends that message a little better than dash twos. I don't know. Again, I will underscore to this committee that in terms of where we start,
as a work group, it's not going to make a difference. We've got the work that we've done in the BAT. I think that's a viable approach, and I would intend to pursue that in any event. So I don't think we need the dash twos to make that happen. But if we can do it in such a way that we maintain a spirit of goodwill and willingness to work together a little better with the dash threes, I'm willing to go there. Representative Williams?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I guess I want to take this opportunity as we're sort of having this discussion here to thank you and commend you for the work you've done on biting off what most people would have avoided, I think, this session in discussion. And I think all of us were hopeful that perhaps momentum might build behind a particular proposal that could help the state out from the challenge that it currently faces. And we ran into the, both the impacts of time and the largeness of the proposal that slowed this down. And this discussion reminds me of one I had on the steps of the Capitol the other day with a lobbyist who reminded me of the old, I think it was the Greek mythology, the story of Sisyphus.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Sisyphus was the one who
pushed measure seven up the hill, didn't he?
Yeah, continually put, and that was the context of the discussion, actually. Pushed the stone up the hill, and just about the time he got it to the top, it would roll back down to the bottom again. And certainly I have a certain amount of concern that we pushed the stone, we've gotten it maybe three-quarters of the way up the hill, and we're going to adjourn with a task force, and the task force will start at the bottom of the hill with the stone, and the issue being as large as it is, we get another one of these reports that ends up coming out to the legislature. And I appreciate the chair's efforts with these amendments to make that less so than it might otherwise have been if it was just on the agenda item of a regular interim revenue committee agenda. I will follow the chairman's lead on this because I want this to be a successful opportunity to address this issue. But I guess I would say a word of warning to those in the audience here today. Everyone has come forward saying that this system needs reform. We are not going to be able to reform this system and protect every particular interest group. It is time for Oregonians, regardless of who you represent, to start to figure out that this is going to have to be a compromise solution to broaden the base and to solve the revenue problem that we're in as a state. And that means that there are going to be some winners and some losers, and maybe some of both at the very same time, being the very same people. But it is totally appropriate that we address this issue, and I'm hopeful that in my last session, if the good people of my district see fit to reelect me, that we'll actually be able to pass significant tax reform legislation that is meaningful to the state, that is both fair, that is equitable, that is balanced, but that takes us out of this roller coaster revenue picture that the last decade and a half of ill-advised ballot measures has gotten us into.
Thank you, Representative Williams.
Sure.
Representative Beck.
I'm not going to make a motion.
Okay.
I will defer to you on what you want to do and whether you want to make some of the, I think there have been some good suggestions to these amendments that I think Tom Gallagher's concern about the predisposition toward revenue neutrality, I think, is a good comment. While that might have been a good benchmark in legislative session context, I'm not sure it makes a lot of sense if we're going to have a free-flowing discussion about revenue in the interim. On the other hand, while I have my Tigger tie on today, I'm going to make an Eeyore pronouncement. I really don't think it matters because I really, and I know you've done a great job, just one of the bills I will tell people I was most proud to put my name on in my three sessions, because this is one of the things I campaigned on, and you're the first person in this process to talk seriously about restructuring our tax system. And I've gone home the last two interims railing on this body for not even talking about it, and I will not be able to do that. In saying that, I think you and I have talked about the timing issue, and I deep down believe that this was the session to accomplish this while we had a governor who was leaving office. I cannot foresee a political dynamic that would allow a brand new governor of either party to be campaigning on a tax reform that shifted some of the tax burden to businesses, let alone advocate for such a proposal that would still certainly be controversial as a result of any study. And I think it's just very unlikely that the next governor, be he or she Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative, will take this on and provide the leadership that will be needed in the center of this building. And so I really feel that we've political dynamics in this building have created a lost opportunity this session, and I'm sorry we aren't doing more. So I really, at this point, don't care what you want to do. I defer to you. I wish you all well, and if I can be helpful, I certainly will try to be.
You'll leave your phone number.
I'll leave my phone number. Right.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I've missed most of the testimony because one of my bills was in the other room, and I understand that you are deliberating between the dash twos and the dash threes.
That's
I heard
right.
your comment that you're leaning towards the dash threes for, you know, some reasons that I picked up since I was walking in and out. However, I would just like to state that, you know, I'll defer to what the chair wants as well, but I really prefer the dash twos, and I'll tell you why I prefer the dash twos. Because, first of all, in the dash threes, it simply says, in studying state tax reform, the task force shall consider a business activity tax and other new revenue sources, period. We talked about a whole lot more than that in this committee when we were talking about our what we wanted to do with this bill. We listed in the dash twos all of the things that we've learned in all of that testimony, and I think that that should be, I mean, we can bring that in as notes, if you will, to the group if they start in, but in some ways, I think giving direction to the group so that they don't start at ground zero, but they build on this experience we've had here would be important. And on page 2, lines 16 and 17, and this was the line that actually I think a couple of us asked for after the last work session that we had on this, it says the impact of the tax on low-income households, including senior citizens. That's not a new revenue source. That's a policy direction change, and I would hate for that to be lost in the conversation. So, again, I'll defer to the chair, but I want to make sure that these things that we've learned in this process move forward into the next process and that it doesn't become an entirely different animal that we...
Well, I will respond to you pretty much how I responded to Representative Fori in her comments, that, and this is probably why Mr. Russell wishes that thinks that maybe the threes could be even toned down a little further. I mean, they do name a business activity tax, and to the extent that that is the charge in this in these dash three amendments, that carries with it all of the work that we have done this session, including the very issues that you talked about that I would intend and will make a personal commitment to bring forward to the work group as issues to deal with. I will say, though, that my experience has been, I'm thinking we passed last session House Bill 2525 that created this hearing officer panel that had been a bill of mine that had been vetoed the session before and had been around for umpteen sessions before that. Sometimes these things take time, and over time sometimes they improve. I guess I don't have quite the confidence in my ability to have scoped out all of these issues in one session or part of one session and to be able to pronounce that we have found the perfect tax and the only thing that is left to do is evangelize. I'm willing to be informed by the discussion and debate and concerns of others, and if there is a better mousetrap to adopt that and claim victory as we go forward. I guess that's my point on this, but I don't mean to make the BAT the Manchurian line. Is that right? Is that the that is?
Manchurian candidate.
Yeah, that was yeah.
One was in France.
We do not want to make this a Manchurian candidate. We do not want to do that. Okay.
Representative Witt, you had your
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I prefer the dash threes primarily because I think if we go with the dash twos, the direction is pretty overwhelming that the focus should be on the BAT, and I think we've heard testimony that the business community has expressed some significant concern about it, and I think they've done it in a productive and respectful way. And if the dash twos go forward and the impression is this is an interim group that's going to spend most of its time or a high percentage of its time looking at a tax which the business community appears to pretty strongly oppose, I don't think we're really going to get the kind of buy-in and the goodwill we need from the business community to do this successfully. Of course, the dash threes don't prevent that committee from pursuing the route that they think is most productive, bringing that proposal or proposals to the legislature. Secondly, I'm a little surprised with some of the testimony relative to revenue neutrality. From the start in our discussions on this bill, revenue neutrality has been one of the things that we agreed was going to stay in this concept. This was not an effort to raise more tax dollars. This was an effort to stabilize the tax base. This was an effort to lower the reliance upon the income tax. So now to come forward at this point and start pushing, let's find a way to raise more revenue, I think undermines what has been a basic premise that we've been operating on throughout this process. And of course, I think it's very important we keep the words revenue neutrality. I prefer the dash threes. I think your presentation of that today and your discussion of those today, Mr. Chairman, makes sense. We need the business community to buy into this process in a responsible way. I think we have a lot better chance of doing that with the dash threes.
Thank you, and I'm glad you mentioned revenue neutrality. I agree with that. I think as we have seen, any effort to restructure the system in itself is fraught with enough peril. If you inject into that the debate over more or less, I'm afraid that just becomes even more difficult to move forward. And I think what we've got, what we need is to create a system that is structurally sound, and perhaps leave for another day the issue of whether that should lead to more revenue or less revenue. But I think if we try and take that on at the same time that we're dealing with a structural issue, we're doomed irredemptively. That's what Representative Bates.
Just a couple of quick comments. First, I would echo Representative Max Williams' comments about this, and specifically the ones about you. I appreciate what you've done here, and you've taken some political risk to do this. I also would like to say that I like the idea we're thinking long-term for a change, which is something that in my short period of time up here we seem not to do very often, and I appreciate that. Also, I'd say that I've had about 5 or 6 meetings with businessmen in the Medford area through the Chamber of Commerce and through several separate visits when I was down there talking about this tax. The initial reaction to it was very negative, but as you talked about it more, they understood it more, and you talked about capital gain changes and individual tax changes, they became more receptive, and they clearly are interested in it now to the point of wanting to look at it and think about it and ask for packets to be sent down, which I think, Paul, you did for me. I appreciate that. And the response, though, is starting to turn from absolutely negative, well, maybe we should look at this. Maybe you guys have got a good point here. They also are very comfortable with the idea of a task force and will look forward to taking part in that and understanding it, being part of the process. So it may come to naught again, as we have so often here, but I think that there's a good possibility this time we might actually get something done over the next interim, and maybe this will be House Bill number 1 in the next session.
Yeah, it'll be
2001. Which has got a ring to it. It would be a space oddity, wouldn't it?
Representative Brown.
Thank you. I get to weigh in last, and I too want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the effort in taking this challenge on. I want to second some of the comments that Representative Whitman made regarding the feelings of the business community, and with all that's been said, I'm ready to vote.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kapori.
I'm sorry. A couple of the speakers talked about the possibility of having someone from the labor community on the task force, and I just hope that I know that we're...
I'm about to make a conceptual amendment.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let me do this then, committee, if you're with me. We're looking at the dash threes. I think, Dexter, you're here. Dexter, do you want to come on up? I think this will be real simple, but I want to make sure since it's conceptual. Now, this would be committee on line 19 after the words export business. My inclination would be to put a comma and follow that with organized labor. Dexter, is that appropriate language? Would you prefer just labor?
Mr. Chair, I really don't know. I think organized labor would be fine.
We don't want disorganized people on this.
Some of us might consider that an oxymoron. You know, it's like being a political party and being a Democrat.
Yeah.
Organized labor? Ralph, does that work for you? Okay. So that would be a conceptual amendment to the dash threes. I'll come back to this in a second. That would be to add a comma following the word business on line 19 and then insert organized labor. And then, Dexter, if it doesn't make any difference, And if it's language that just makes people uncomfortable, on page 2 of the dash 3s, line 20, I would be inclined to delete, this is just a deletion, after the word private, delete that comma to the end of the sentence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that work for you?
Yes.
Okay. Committee, are you there on that one? Page 2, line 20, after the word private, delete everything from there, including the comma, to the end of the sentence. Okay. Just the last thing I would say before I make the motion on the dash 3 amendments is that one of the frustrations that I've had in this and looking at previous efforts is the number of studies of tax reform that have been done and the dearth of results that we have seen from that. I know the governor in the last 4 or 5 years has had 2 very high-level blue ribbon commissions look at tax reform, and there's a cynic in me that suggests that in some quarters the strategy is to talk tax reform to death. If you keep talking, maybe it won't happen. But I am serious about this, not as a matter of politics, but as a matter of pure policy, that this is something that, as leaders of the state, we need to take on, even though there may not be a particular group behind it saying we need to do this. I think it's something that we and this committee have come to recognize in our work. I know I have in the previous 2 sessions working on this revenue committee, the faults in our revenue system that I think really do hold us back from the kind of growth that business and labor and the citizens of the state could realize if we had a more functional system. And that is my intent on this, to be very intentional, very focused at bringing forward some proposals for the next legislative session and not just a report that we can put on the shelf along with the rest that we've got. So with that, committee, the chair would move first a conceptual amendment to the dash 3 amendments. That would be to insert, after the word export businesses on line 19 of page 1, a comma and the words organized labor. Is there any discussion on that conceptual amendment? Any objection? Okay, and then also another conceptual amendment on the dash 3 amendments. On page 2, line 20, after the word private, deleting the comma and the rest of the sentence down to line 22. Is there any discussion on that conceptual amendment? Any objection? Okay, then the chair would move the dash 3 amendments as conceptually amended to House Bill 3942 to the Ways and Means, to the floor of the due pass recommendation and with referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Joan, you look like you're confused. I'm sorry. I guess we have to move them into the bill, don't we? They replaced the bill. Sorry. Move the dash 3 amendments as conceptually amended into House Bill 3942 and ask if there is any discussion or objection on that amendment. Okay, thank you, committee. Now we are at 3942 as amended by the conceptually amended dash 3s, and the chair would move that to the floor of the due pass recommendation with referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Is there any further discussion on that motion, Representative Beck?
Mr. One more comment. I do think Ralph Croner made a good comment about talking to the state about this, and as this goes down to Ways and Means, I hope that there's enough money to really have this be a discussion as I'm reflecting on Governor Roberts' conversation with Oregon. For all its flaws, having participated as a citizen in some of those dialogues, it was at least initially a well-intentioned effort that got people all around the state through the communications system talking about tax reform. I think the aftermath of that was poorly executed, but I do think field hearings or use of technology to bring more people into this discussion rather than having it be this sort of sterilized conversation that these task forces tend to have. I think if there's a way that in the budgeting process to ensure that we have a truly modern discussion that involves citizens in these deliberations, I think you're more likely to be more successful. So that's just a comment about to you, to impart to the Ways and Means people when you ask for money.
Okay. Any other discussion? Joan, please call the roll.
Representative Day.
Aye.
Pat.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Pat.
Pass votes vanilla. Yes.
Aye.
Pat.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Charleston.
Aye.
Performing.
Aye.
Chair Shatterley. Aye. Very moving bill here. Never went in and out. House Bill 3942, as amended, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation with referral to Ways and Means. And again, I want to thank the committee for their very supportive and kind comments. We are not done. Okay. Let's go to House Bill 2863. Ed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2863, as you will recall, creates a credit for sales of manufactured dwelling facilities to qualified tenants associations. The last time we had this bill before us was April 23rd. At that time, you adopted the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments. The Dash 1 set the amount of the credit at 9% of the total sales consideration exchanged. The Dash 2 amendments resolve a technical glitch and really don't have a substantive change to the bill. This time we've got Dash 3 amendments, which make a couple of changes as requested by the committee last time. First thing it does is it sunsets the credit at the end of the 2005 tax year. It also sets the total amount of certified sales allowable during that time not to exceed $11,100,000. That translates into a total credit cap during the 4 years of about $1 million, or just under $1 million. The Dash 3 amendments also direct the Manufactured Dwelling Park Ombudsman to certify eligible sales in order to keep track that this cap is not exceeded.
Okay. Bob Leipine, did you want to come up and talk about the Dash 3s? Representative Carlson, did you want to say anything first?
I'd rather hear that.
Okay.
Bob has to say first.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I am Bob Leipine, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services, here to comment on the Dash 3s for House Bill 2863. My only comment, Mr. Chairman, committee members, is as the bill states, the Ombudsman Program would be the certifier of that activity. I just want to get on the records so I have some direction. There is not a funding apparatus mentioned in the bill. My assumption is that the same resources that funds the Ombudsman Program currently is a resource that can be used for what costs that are incurred for the certification process.
Representative Carlson?
If that's fine with the agency, will that
work
for you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I think that would be the appropriate, again, just a point of history, that the Ombudsman Program was created with an assessment that the tenants pay on an annual basis. Was originally $3 a year, now it went up to $6 a year last session. So there are resources there. But again, because there is probably no statutory language that specifically talks about this type of activity in the current Ombudsman language, I just wanted to make sure that it was the committee's intent that those resources would apply to costs that are incurred to do this activity.
Okay. Let's make that record that that's the committee's intent.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right. Anything else, Robert? Let me ask if anybody else is here that would like to speak on 2863, since we have some new amendments up today. Nobody here? Okay. Representative Carlson, what's your pleasure?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say that this bill was one that I brought forward, as you recall, because there have been a number of attempts for sales to be made from park owners to manufactured home dwellers and tenants organizations. They have not been successful up to this point. We thought we needed a carrot that was large enough to entice park owners to give this a whirl, despite the other barriers that are out in the system that this bill doesn't address. I think if we can say that we took an excellent bill and made it superb with these amendments, we could perhaps, maybe that would be a little bit on the exaggeration side, but I think that what the committee's desire was is to make sure that we had some sort of a checkpoint to make sure that the carrot wasn't so wonderfully huge that we broke the bank. And given that we didn't have a revenue impact because there hasn't been any experience with it, I think this is a good solution. The part about the manufactured dwelling park ombudsman was something that actually the legislative council and I think the revenue staff came up with because they needed some sort of an entity to be the checkpoint there. And if Mr. Repine is fine with that, and I'm fine with it too, it seems to be appropriate given the nature of the credit.
Okay. And the section, the dash three is then the section three also include the sunset.
The sunset and the cap, correct.
Okay.
And would you care for a motion?
I would be pleased.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I would move the dash three amendments to House Bill 2863.
Let me ask you, have we already moved the dash ones and twos?
Yes, Mr. Chair, they've okay. been moved and adopted.
Okay, thank you. Representative Carlson moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 2863. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Witt.
We're limiting the overall tax credit in any given year to roughly $1 million, I believe. Is there anything in here that limits it per transaction? In other words, if a sale came through on property that was for $11 million, and that was the first one through, and it got certified, it would eat up all of the credit, and that taxpayer would end up with $1 million credit. Isn't that right, Ed?
Representative Witt, members of the committee, that's correct. There's just a cap on total gross consideration certified. There is no per exchange cap.
And Mr. Chair, if I could clarify also, it's not just $11 million per year, it's $1 million per, it's an overall cap of $1 million to all the taxpayers.
Yeah, I understand, Representative. That gets to the concern I think that was implied in my question, because if some of these properties presumably sell in the millions of dollars, and if you have a property that sells for more than $11 million, you've got a tax credit of up to, which would eat up the entire $1 million that is allowed for the year under this bill, and anybody else would be foreclosed from using it. I don't know. I mean, I appreciate the intent of the bill, Mr. Chairman, but I'm very uncomfortable with the fact that we're providing tax credits of up to $1 million for a taxpayer who could be selling something that actually has a loss that they could have a loss carry forward on, and then they get a huge tax credit on top of it. I don't quite understand how this makes sense, and in fact, the higher the sale price, obviously, the bigger the tax credit, but the tax credit's not in any way tied into what's the taxable income, other than what the overall taxable income of the taxpayer is. Mm-hmm. So this creates an incentive for someone to go out and sell a big park, get a big tax credit, and shelter that against other income the taxpayer earns over several years, and walk away with several $1 million in income tax-free. It doesn't seem to me to be good tax policy.
Representative Carlson?
No.
I'm sorry that you had your hand up.
No, I was just going to say that Representative Witt raised his concerns last time. We tried to address them, and this is what we came up with. So.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, and I do appreciate Representative Carlson's effort to address my concerns. I'm just not comfortable with this. I mean, this does create a situation where someone can shelter millions of dollars worth of income with a tax credit.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Representative Hess.
To address those concerns, would a cap on for each sale more than $25,000 or $50,000
in tax credit? Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't want to go there. I mean, we have not done one of these. We don't know the size of the parks and whatever, and I think it would become way too complicated. The manufactured park people are happy with this, and they worked with the staff on it, and so, you know, I think duly noted, and this committee can decide the way they want to go, but I frankly don't want to go back and do that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Witt.
Yeah, from my opinion, Representative, that would probably be helpful. Representative Carlson's apparently not interested. I mean, from the standpoint of the manufactured homes people or the parks people being satisfied with it, I mean, to me, the issue is it good tax policy? Does it make sense? Does it make sense to shelter up to $10 or $11 million worth of income from taxation, income that might not even be related to the park? I think that's the issue I'm looking at here, and I really don't care at this point who's supporting it. It's just not tax policy. It seems to me to be logical. or good tax policy to adopt. And I would think of the precedent here that we could be setting as it might apply to other industries. It just doesn't seem to be related very well to a justification for this huge tax break. So because of that, I mean, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to oppose it. But I appreciate Representative Carlson's effort to address my concerns.
Anybody else? Representative Bates.
Representative Carlson, my last notes this last time around were the Dash 3 would have a limit for sale, a sunset in 2005, and a limit for total. And a limit for sale seemed appropriate to me and something that could be worked out, but I wasn't on that task force, didn't work with you on it. Is there some particular reason that we just couldn't go there on a limit for sale? Was it just something that just, it was a nightmare and it couldn't happen? I mean, I have the same concerns. I don't want to see some huge developer come in as it sells off a big piece. And what we're really trying to do is get a pilot program going here, see if it'll work, because I think it's good. I think it's good policy what you're trying to do. I want to support it. I'm just afraid of somebody coming in and abusing it. Unintended consequences seem to be a part of the game up here.
Okay. Representative Bates, it was because after we got done with the meeting last time, there were two proposals left forward. One was the sunset, and the other was the cap on the entire system. So once that $1 million is used up, nobody else gets a tax credit. It's over, and then we can come back and revisit if we're able to do that. My notes didn't talk about upper
maybe it was transaction. In my head, not right. Something I was thinking about out loud. I'm sorry.
Anybody else? Representative Witt.
I'm sorry to weigh in again.
No, it's okay.
But I'm sitting here thinking, this creates an incentive. If someone knows they've got a large taxable gain, maybe they sold a business, I don't know what they did, but let's say I've got a $10 million taxable gain from some event and I'm subject to Oregon income tax. I now have an incentive to go out and buy a park, presumably at market value, buy it from someone who's a current park owner, and then I turn around within the tax year and I structure a deal somewhere below what I bought the park, at a below market price, and I sell it to the tenants of the park. I now, if it's a $10 million sale, I now get a $1 million tax credit. I'm the first one to do this, which shelters my $10 million gain from a different transaction. I mean, what we're doing here is we're creating a tax shelter for someone who has lots of taxable income to go out and buy a park at a market price and turn around and sell it at a lower price to shelter income that they made in some other pursuit or some other venture. I mean, I think we need to consider, does that make sense? Is that good policy?
I guess, let me ask, we need to, I think the purpose here is to create an incentive for a park owner to sell to the tenants association. And if your point, Representative Witt, is that, in this case, let's say a $1 million tax credit that's really usable against all other sources of income, is more incentive than we need to create. I'm guessing on the other end, if we limit it to $5,000, that's probably not enough of an incentive. Do you have a sense of what appropriate range might be that would, I will not say incent, that would create an incentive on the part of a park owner and still accomplish the substantial purpose of the bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think what would make sense would be something like a 50% credit against taxable income for the income made in the sale. If you sell to a tenant group, for example, let's say you have a basis of $1 million in the park, you sell it for $2 million, you get $1 million gain. That $1 million gain subject to Oregon income tax. That gain's about a $90,000 tax. Provide a credit of 50% of the tax if you sell to a tenant organization. There, the savings $45,000. That way, it ties it to the actual gain made on the sale, and it provides a reasonable incentive. In that case, it's almost $50,000 for selling to a tenant group. But you know, I think that's a more logical way than creating this enormous tax shelter that people who aren't even in the business would go out and buy parks in order to get the tax shelter, to shelter other income. And it still creates a preference to selling to tenant groups.
Representative Carlson?
Again, I'm not sure whether, and the park owners aren't here to have a discussion. I don't think anybody's here from the park pack. Are you here? Are you at the park? To talk about whether that would be enough incentive. I know that in discussing with them after the last meeting, they told me that there are numerous barriers to making this transaction happen. So if Representative Witt thinks it's going to be an easy thing, even with the tax credit, it's not an easy thing. There are horrendous barriers out there. People don't just turn around and sell it to a tenants association. That's why it's never happened. So if we were going to go to something that Representative Witt suggests, I want to get their read on it and find out whether they believe that it will be enough of an incentive to make people want to do this.
And let's do this. Let's set this for Thursday. Let's check on that. I want to be careful in how we move forward on this thing. I apologize, Representative Carlson, for my part in not pushing this forward, but I guess as long as the questions have been raised, it's 3 days, 3 more days, let's find that out, and then we'll take it back up one way or another on Thursday. And I'd like Representative Bates.
I'd rather have them raised here in the committee and resolved and on the floor and have it fail.
Yeah.
And I think it's a chance that might happen, and ask for the Senate and for the Senate office. So I think it's a good bill. Mm-hmm. I don't want to support you on this. I just don't want it to fail because we have something we haven't thought about yet.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. That's how we all pull together, one for all for one, just like the Three Musketeers or Don Quixote.
Or Eeyore.
Bid farewell here to the... bid farewell to our friends. He'll be back again... What?
You know what to do when you sell your
what?
No.
Your
but
company.
Carlson gets a vote.
And
Bank
Park will break on the 2 and salt.
Yeah, okay,
okay.
No, we didn't do 20.
No, we did not.
Right. No one ever showed up.
All right, with that, then, we'll close the public work session on whatever bill that was we were in and adjourn the meeting.